Okay. All right, I'm going to do this when I want you to take it. I'm gonna point at you, and you're going to take it. Here we go. And in conclusion.
Nailed it.
That was good for take one, right?
Yeah, I did all the talking, apparently. He won't talk, Alec.
I talked.
He'll barely talk. He just sits over there and flips me off the whole time.
I'm supposed to do something else?
Okay, here he goes. Hey everybody, Brian Collins here with another episode of the Pixel Hub Podcast. Of course, with me as always is Dan Lefebvre. How's it going, Dan?
It's going well. How are you going?
Oh, it's going great, man. Today's topic is really, really interesting. Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard of faux user interfaces or fake user interfaces?
It's kind of like the soup, right?
The soup. No, not like that at all. No, it's like it's the thing that when you see like in the X-Men, when someone walks in a room and they have like some kind of hologram interface that they're using on some kind of computer, or if it's on Avengers, or if it's on Iron Man in a suit and that kind of thing, a faux user interface, right? Someone has to design these things, and they're really, really technical, and they're very, very interesting how they're created. And we decided to talk to somebody who does this for a living. His name is Jace Hansen, and he's been on some really big movies. For example, Iron Man. He's responsible for designing and building the Iron Man suit user interface, the HUD that you see in those shots. Robert Downey Jr.'s face.
Probably one of the most popular faux.
Yeah, one of the most iconic faux around. He's also been in Hunger. He's also done work on Hunger Games, Rise of the Planet of the Apes, just a lot of stuff, a lot of experience, Jay says. So we're going to talk to him today about the specifics on how you go about building these things and how he came to be a faux maker. A faux maker.
Now we are talking about the soup now. Yeah.
Faux. So I think it's going to be great. So I can't wait to get to talk to him. So without further ado, here is Jace Hansen. So Jace, I mean, you have a really interesting job, right? I mean, you make like user interfaces in movies and films, right? But what did you do before this? How did you get to the point in your career where you're doing this?
Yeah, I started out doing design and print, and so that was kind of like a weird way of. I actually always liked visual effects and stuff for film, but kind of went a different route, and I was designing stuff, you know, grid based, typography based, print designs, and then went over to web design and started getting into Flash, and that was kind of the motion aspect. So I started doing stuff with After Effects and motion, and I didn't even realize this type of work was like a job at all. Like I'd always actually paid attention to screens in films, and paid a lot of attention. Like I'd actually freeze frame them, and I just thought it was really cool. You could read some of the text and stuff, and but I never realized like people actually did that until I met a guy named Mark Kohler, and he did like just amazing work, like on Bourne Identity and The Island and films like that. And you know, I saw his reel and it had all this great stuff in it. I'm like, dude, like that's your job? That's got to be like the greatest job ever. Like I love that. You know, that's total geek job right there. And he said, well, you know, with your background, you'd actually be pretty good for it because you can do UI design, but you can also do motion, and not a lot of people kind of have that combination. And so I thought about it for a while, and I figured, all right, I'm going to reach out to him and see if I can maybe, you know, do something for free for him, like an intern or something, you know, but I knew I had to show something. I was like, I knew people were always, you know, asking him how to get in. And so I thought, well, I was doing a job for Intel, like a motion graphics project, and I somehow convinced them to add in fictional, like futuristic UIs on their computer screens. And so I got paid to learn how to do it, you know, like it's like a trial by fire.
It works.
And I did them, and they were awful. But I sent them to Mark, and I said, hey, I know these suck, but if you ever have a need, you know, for help or anything, I'm totally game. And I just wanted to prove, you know, that I wasn't just all talk. And he emailed me right back and said, hey, I've actually got these guys looking. And And it was at a time when I was like, I had a full-time job, and it was all in Vegas, and they needed me to, these guys called me up and they're like, can you be here Monday in LA for Star Trek? We'll need you out here for 3 months, you know? And I was like, oh my God, that's awesome. But I can't, you know, because I had this full-time job. I couldn't just leave it. And that's, you know, that's when I started really like thinking, well, maybe this is something I can like actually pursue, and maybe I've got to get some priorities together. And it was a bit of a while later, because it was such a big jump, that I decided to just pursue it, like make it my main thing and nothing else. And so it's been great ever since.
Awesome. You know, I read somewhere that like you said, you were kind of early on, you were interested in like graphic design within film, and I read somewhere that you would like would pause movies like on Star Wars, and you were interested in like the helmet designs for some of the pilots and the X-Wing or whatever. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I just always drawn to the graphic nature of things, and maybe I used to like make little model kits, you know, like all kids get sometimes they get the model kits. And I loved the decals, you know, like putting the decals on, because those are always the graphics. Mm-hmm. And so, like, you'd get, like, a X-Wing fighter and put all those decals on. I was wondered what the heck, you know, what the symbols meant and everything. So, And then same thing for the little display screens. I always figured, you know, I wanted to know more about the movie, and I figured there was some hidden gems in there somewhere that I could find and, you know, maybe tell me more. Be an Easter egg or something like that.
So you worked on Iron Man, on the Iron Man's suit and his UI inside, right? So it's the part where the camera's usually looking at his face, and then you see all of these three-dimensional holographic things and controls floating in front of him, right? And so you call these things faux UIs, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, it's a FUI, so the F can stand for fantasy, fictional, freaking or faux. Yeah. Okay.
So give us a brief definition of what an FUI is.
So an FUI, Mark Colleran actually coined that term, and it's just a UI that is based in fantasy rather than in reality, and the difference between like a real UI is that real UI is very based on a user experience. You know, you're trying to make it usable for those users. And then for a fictional UI, your main goal is actually to tell a story. Right. So usually the director has something that he's trying to, you know, some kind of message he's trying to get across. Mm-hmm. And usually it's got to be, you know, it has to get across really fast, like maybe in the matter of less than a second. You know, so less than 24 frames. And so your design is all based on that. And then you're trying to make it as plausible and realistic as possible. I sometimes go for like ultra, you know, researched out. I really like to kind of really know the subject. So like for the HUDs, for Iron Man, I created a HUD Bible, because I had to understand like, you know, just everything that went in there and why it was there. And the directors really like that, because they're trying to tell such a crazy story, and it's such an elaborate, unbelievable story, that everything they can put into the film that kind of has some basis in reality or looked like it was really well thought out helps, helps them tell that crazy story.
And so they can be HUDs, these FUIs, but they can also be things like holograms or something, like if you have a map that is projecting upwards or something like that, and you're on a ship, or somebody's using it, or they're interacting in it in some way, right? So it's not necessarily limited to heads-up displays.
No, in fact, when I first got into it, I thought it was all going to be like computer screens. So it would be just computer screens that actors sat there and used. But it's actually become much more. The HUDs is one element of it, and that's in a lot of films. But holographs are kind of the new computer screens. I do more holographic type displays or three-dimensional type of computer displays than I do like flat traditional computer screen designs.
So, you know, when I see a lot of these things, there is a lot of information, like to the sides usually or somewhere, that doesn't really mean anything. You know, it has to be, like you said, it sort of has to communicate something very quickly, but it's sort of a placeholder. Is that sort of how you approach it when you do research? Do you go, okay, there needs to be some, like, you don't go for specific messages, you sort of go for forms of shapes or letters or numbers to represent something?
Yeah, I do kind of a combination. A lot of people design differently. A lot of people will, you know, just kind of fill the screen with stuff. But I think, you know, one of the things I was telling the team when we were doing the HUDs and stuff was, you know, you may not, like, an audience member may not be able to see everything in that shot, but but they can kind of feel everything in the shot. Mm-hmm. So, like, if something's not really authentic to the story and his HUD and stuff, you kind of feel it. And it's almost the same reason, like set designs and costume designs, you know, you may not be able to see all the detail in the threading of a costume, right, but the fact that they put that in there, you kind of feel it, and it just makes it feel better. So, yeah, with the HUD stuff, actually everything in there has a purpose. And then there's, you know, if you can't read it, I look at it as texture. So it's not necessarily that you have to read it all, but, you know, trying to go for that kind of realism. Mm-hmm. It's part of what I really like about doing stuff in film, you know, is they give you time to do that, and they actually really appreciate you doing that, in your work. So,
you kind of mentioned before about how, you really like to pull the story into that. At what point are you brought in to know that what you're putting in the HUD or the UI is really pushing the story forward?
Or the characters.
Or the characters forward in some way, yeah.
Yeah, so you get brought in at different times depending on the film. So most of the time I get brought in before they film. I guess it might be like 50-50. Sometimes you brought in after they've filmed everything, and you're doing post work on it. And sometimes you get brought in before they film everything, and you're helping them kind of set up the universe or whatever, you know, the kind of look of the film. So for, like, you know, the Avengers and Iron Man stuff, you'll do some stuff beforehand, and some stuff gets used on set when they're filming, and then most of the stuff is done in post. And they're giving us kind of almost like a Excel spreadsheet of all the story points that they want to be communicated. So they're actually a lot of times very specific about what they want to be communicated in each shot. And your job is to, like, interpret that and make it try to be readable in you know, 24 frames.
So what kind of? Sorry, go ahead.
And I was just gonna say, like, so, like, on Avengers, I was pulling in the edits, the rough edits, into I'd just bring them into Premiere, and then I would have the shots and my animations and stuff in After Effects, and I would time out things based on the, you know, the shots coming before the HUD shots and then after, so that everything kind of flowed. Because you don't want to, like, be in this great action sequence where, like, you know, Stark's flying through New York City or whatever, and then you cut to the HUD and it completely doesn't gel with the rest of the film. So so I would even pace the animation based on the story.
So you're talking about sometimes you come in before and sometimes after. Does what determines that? Is that, like, how much the characters are actually, or the actors on screen are actually interacting with the interface? Because I know sometimes, you know, they have to know where on screen where they're going to be doing
absolutely.
Something.
So, like on Hunger Games, Mockingjay, it also depends on, like, the director. Like,
some
directors really, really, really want on-set things for the actors, but also for themselves. So they know how to film it, and also, like on Mockingjay, they wanted it for the lighting on the actors, because it was these dark. They were kind of like in District 13, and they were, you know, trying to break into hack into the Capitol's, you know, broadcasting system, and so a lot of that story, Mockingjay 1, was told like this, the whole second half of the film was told through screens, basically these big screens. And so, I was actually on set for that in Atlanta. With Venti, Hristova, and she was the VFX supervisor for Cantina. And, yeah, they brought us on to basically be able to have something really concrete for the actors to react to. And so we would explain it to the actors, kind of like Beatty, played by Jeffrey Wright. He had this like big command station of multi-monitors around him with, you know, all these kind of data displays of waveforms and things, because he was hacking into the Capitol. And you know, a few people had worked on that. I took it and found some friends and that had actually hacked into systems and they had hacked into them like in the 90s, and which fit perfectly because the directive on those screens for Mockingjay was that all District 13 stuff was going to be kind of lo-fi, you know, it's kind of grungy, kind of run down, as opposed to the Capitol's technology, which is all brand new and shiny. And so I based all these things off of kind of like really old technologies for hacking into, you know, signals. And so I explained it all to Jeffrey Wright about like which, you know, which did what. And, you know, they find it really helpful to kind of like not feel like they're just sitting at a really fake screen that's not thought out at all. Right. You know?
Now, do you go in the design of these things, do you go as far as to customize them for particular characters? For example, if you have a character that uses a UI consistently throughout a scene, like in a ship, like a captain or something, do you try and fit the UI to the character in any way? And if so, how do you go about doing that?
Yeah, actually, that's a cool point, because I think with Fury on a helicarrier,
yeah,
like I based it off of his character. So he's got this, you know, the UI kind of has these kind of cold, no nonsense, hard edged, sharp edges, you know. And I just think that it should fit not only with set design, you know, so it doesn't look like it's you know, standing out in terms of the design and the production design of the whole film, but it should match that character and as much as possible. If it's a certain character's, you know, command center or whatever, and then Hill, the female character who has her station, we actually made that a bit softer. You know, we changed the line work a bit, and you know, it just kind of fits better with her, and even though she's a badass as well. So, you know, yeah, that's always fun. I think that's a good way of getting inspiration for like, where do you start, you know, from a, from a blank page, is look at the set design, look at the hardware, look at the characters, and then look at the story elements.
One of the things I was really interested in asking you was about conventions and rules for these types of things. And, you know, everything in film almost has a convention, whether it's editing or shot composition, something like that. You have rules that have been established for years. Are there similar rules to these FUIs that have sort of been created over the years? For example, do certain colors represent an evil person versus the good person, something like that?
Yeah. Actually, really? Colors is one of the main. I was gonna say as a first thing would be like they call it make it blue. You always end up getting told to make your interfaces blue, and it's that's mainly because it just looks better on film, and like the way they grade the film and everything, it tends to always go towards a blue kind of cast. And so if your UI is kind of blue, it just works. But as far as, the good guys, bad guys thing, you know, there's always the red, it's the bad guys or the alerts, and the good guys is always kind of like a blue. Or, you know, in Mockingjay, we actually changed it around. We went for kind of an amber tone, kind of like the old CRT amber monochrome monitors. And so that was the thinking on that, you know, and then the Capitol was the blue. Because it was just so high tech and futuristic, you know, and that kind of look. But, yeah, so colors is, is definitely one thing, and then just kind of rules of design. Mm-hmm. Leading your eye into a certain area becomes really important. Mm-hmm. So your typical like rule of thirds, and then kind of the way you organize, especially when you're dealing with like lots of really dense information, mm-hmm. where these screens have to look really complicated, and yet you also have to like read that first read needs to be super easy. Mm-hmm. That's a really good balance of like organizing your layout.
So there's typically these things can get really, really complicated looking, but I'm assuming that there's usually like a hero graphic or something that sort of the thing that you want to look at with the information that you can't really read, but you understand. So do you sort of start with that and design the other stuff, the extraneous stuff around it, or do you sort of the opposite?
No, exactly. I go for the biggest, the most important thing first. And then the rest can be secondary, and I always go for just one big main thing per shot. They'll usually ask for two or three, and then I'll narrow it down usually to the one main thing, because in such short shots, you know, you really need to have that main piece of information you need to convey.
Hmm. Now, you had mentioned before that you started off in kind of more traditional design, and you use After Effects and Premiere. But I know Iron Man was not done in After Effects or Premiere necessarily. You're using 3D tools there. At what point do you determine whether or not you're going to use that tool? And what tool do you use for your 3D work?
I use a lot of Cinema 4D and combine it with After Effects. And that's a really back and forth kind of. Luckily, it makes it pretty easy to go back and forth. So, anything that's super volumetric and dimensional will jump over to C4D. And so we're using, like on the HUDs, for instance, we'll use we'll track Robert Downey Jr.'s face in After Effects, and using a really simple point tracker. It's like the simplest track ever. Stephen Laws at Cantina had come up with this on Iron Man 2 of like, you know, instead of doing some crazy complex track, they could just track the inside part of his eyes and his nose, and then they could triangulate that data and get a rotating center null out of it that we could then, you know, attach basically all the graphics to that rotating center null, and everything rotates around him. So super simple setup. You know, we could have like interns like, you know, tracking while we were doing the design work, and then we get the tracks, basically just link up all the graphics, and you have the shot, you know, kind of working. And then that's for all the kind of fine detail, you know, text, numbers and stuff. And then some of the more complex things like the holographic looking objects, like the suits and stuff like that. If he's got a battle damage or something and he needs to pull up a holograph of his suit and find out what's wrong, that'll all be Cinema 4D. And so we'll take the cameras from After Effects, import them into Cinema 4D, put the, you know, 3D objects in there, animate those, render them back out, throw them back into After Effects, all lines up. And so we actually did everything on those HUDs from, you know, basically hand drawing out ideas to the final delivered shots in stereo, all through After Effects and Cinema 4D.
So these things, you know, they have to be used by an actor, right? What is the most difficult part of getting that timing down and making it look like someone's spinning a virtual globe or expanding a view or whatever it is? What's the hardest part of that?
Yeah, I mean, that part can be really challenging. we're working on, actually just finished the Mockingjay 2, which, I guess I probably can't talk too much about, but there was quite a few holographic scenes in there that, you know, that were quite challenging, and not only just on a general basis, getting the lighting right for holographs is sometimes hard, because if you've got like blown out objects in the background, that obviously is gonna just wash out, mm-hmm. you know, any kind of additive holographic look. And so you're constantly like tricking things, and you know, it's all a compositing trickery, sleight of hand. For every shot, you're doing something different, you know, to make it work. And then you've got to make them all somehow look like you haven't changed anything per shot. It was just shot that way naturally. And the interactions are interesting. I mean, you know, especially with, you know, like gesture-based stuff with holographs and all that. I think on the Iron Man, you know, Robert Downey Jr. had like a, I think he hired a sign language coach to kind of work out gestures and stuff that just looked natural, didn't look like he was trying too hard, but looked really fluid and looked precise. And so we would get plates, you know, this one shot in Avengers with Banner and Stark, right? They're in the science lab, and Banner kind of like just touches the screen and slides really delicately, you know, kind of like his character as a scientist. He's kind of like really gentle and everything. And so he would just touch and slide. That was easy to animate too, right? We just put a slider under his finger and he would be changing waveforms. But then Stark, you know, Robert Downey Jr., he had all this flair. He was totally comfortable with technology. He would just walk up to screens, and he did this one where he did his pinky and his forefinger slide down, and then he did like a thumb turn thing, like a corkscrew, and he did it all really fast. And we sat there for a while, like, what are we gonna put under this? And we had heard kind of like, oh yeah, you know, he's kind of fucking with you guys on this one because just see what you guys come up with.
Oh, now so, he's got his pants buddy, down. What's he doing?
Good Annie came up with some great stuff, and I mean, it took like 2 weeks to, you know, get something approved for that. There's so many variations you could do, you know.
I was going to ask you, do you think that was just something he came up with, or was they telling him to do something? Is that generally how it works? The actor just sort of goes, this is what I think it looks like?
Kind of. I mean, they actually do hire consultants on based on like gesture-based things, and if there's holographs, you know, I don't know if you really look, but if you really look closely, there's always light sources for the holographs, and you know, pinpoints in the flooring or somewhere around, and you know, so they really actually do spend a lot of time getting that to look right, because it's so easy. I don't know if you've ever just kind of whipped up a fake one yourselves, but you know, I've seen people do it, and it's really easy just to look completely wrong, you know, so. There is a lot of practice to get that to look smooth and fluid.
So do you typically then, when you got it down, do you send on passes in case, I'm sure there's changes that happen after you guys work on it, or do you actually render it down, and then if there are changes, that has to come back to you?
Yeah, we'll do like stages. So there'll be like, I mean, it's always different, but maybe 3 or 4 kind of iterations, like big iterations, where we get notes back from like a VFX supervisor, or maybe production, or maybe it's the editor. Kind of depends on which phase it is during the film. But editors, you know, will have their notes because they're trying to tell the story. So those will be very like, you know, very much based on, is the story coming across? The VFX supervisor will be very much based on, does this look good or not? You know, does it match the shot, and more of a compositing type of thing. The director is just more about, again, probably more about story and stuff. So you get these notes back, and you kind of hit all those, send a new version, and you do that, you know, a few times. And once you're feeling good about it, you submit it for final, and they either approve it or they say, hey, you know, could you fix this one last thing?
So. I mean, I don't pay, like most people, I don't pay attention to these kind of things during the movie, right? Which doesn't, you know, diminish their importance, probably increases their importance, but, you know, we just don't pay that much attention to them. Can you walk us through what you've seen, the evolution of these things, how they've changed? I mean, I've noticed that some of the stuff that you make and that I see in films today, they're very clear, they're very sort of transparent and corporeal, you know? Has that always been the thing, or have we not had the technology to do that? Have you kind of noticed the evolution of it?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Because, some of the first, like the first screen I ever did was very, pretty much like an app design for for a 2D screen that was essentially like an LCD screen. And, you know, it's very much skeuomorphic type stuff, which I love. And, but, you know, very soon it became all about these transparent displays. And when you start designing for transparent displays, that, that kind of look just doesn't work. And so I started going more vector-based and more, you know, and it, it happened in Avatar and also even as far back as like Minority Report and stuff. These transparent displays have a different design look to them. And one of the things that is really important with transparent displays, which they told us on like Avengers, was like, you know, I want to really be able to see the actors' expressions through the displays. So that's where you start getting really minimalist in terms of, you know, finer lines and using dots to define the borders rather than really thick borders. You start thinking about it that way. You're thinking, okay, same with the HUDs, you know, they would tell us, you know, Robert Downey Jr.'s face is like the most expensive in the movie. So don't block it up too much. you gotta leave some room. So I design like really fine transparencies, you know, just, and it gives a whole different look, but there's actually a purpose for it in that realm as well. And, so I guess that's kind of been the new thing overall as well. Lots of designers are starting to design that way. So,
so what do you love most about what you do?
I love it. It's like my research is, you know, the work that I do is like going to a comic book store, you know, and picking up a few comics or asking the guys about a character or something. That's pretty cool. Like that's a nice way to start your hard work, right? and then just it's such a technical challenge, but it's also like just crazy creative. So this extremes, it's an extreme technical challenge and an extreme creative challenge at the same time, and you're bashing them together, and you got to come up with something that nobody's seen before, and yet it's familiar enough to tell a story, and yet, you know, so that's just I love that challenge. I think the challenge is probably the coolest thing, and geeking out, you know, total geek at heart. So
I don't know what that is. What
I think all of our listeners can understand that.
So
yeah, when you have to define how parts of the Iron Man suit works, that's a pretty cool job. Yeah,
like, it is. Well, I was going to say, this is a very detail oriented craft, right? If someone came to you and said, you know, I'm thinking about maybe doing this, what would you tell them about? What kind of personality traits? Like, are they someone who doesn't mind to like get into the minute particles of a user interface and to spend hours and hours on tiny little things? Do you need that kind of personality or those kind of skill sets?
Yeah, it's exactly that. It's that mixed with like really keeping an eye on that overall big picture, right? So that the first read is really the first read, and it's telling the story. So those are those big things, but then you've got to be able to like have that patience to yeah, you know, I call it pixel fucking. I don't know.
Gives a whole new term for really? FUI. Huh?
Yeah.
Not pixel courting or just straight to
at least buy dinner first.
Yeah, so you're nudging a pixel, you know, one pixel at a time sometimes. That's how I'll work. I'll be zoomed in, you know.
Wow.
6400 and I'll just be nudging pixels all day long, but you know, and then you're looking at it next to me on another screen, zoomed out. And so that's kind of that duality way of designing. And a lot of people, it freaks people out, you know. Some I've actually brought in a few intern people and taught them, and at first it really is kind of overwhelming, because it's almost like a VFX shot with, you know, let's say you had 20,000 elements in this VFX shot. You know, that's kind of how a screen is, because there's so many pieces that are moving and that you're dealing with, and especially nowadays, you know, the designs are a lot more complex and you're animating each little piece in a certain way, and it's all got to look fluid and come together. So, but it's, you know, after you've done it a few times, it's you kind of see the, you've got a workflow that can handle that mass amount of of pieces. So
I keep imagining one of these interns who's sitting quietly for hours, all of a sudden getting up and screaming and just running out the door.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, there's times I feel like, you know, I'm just going to go back to, like, paper. I just want paper. I don't want any computers anymore. They crash. They're like, you know.
Okay, Jace, we've got one more question for you. And it's one of the questions.
Oh, you got really quiet.
What? No, it's one of our questions we do every interview. It's a versus question, right? Something versus something. So, you know, like HUDs, a lot of these HUDs are geared toward providing data very quickly, right, to accomplish a task, like to fly the Iron Man suit. So here's our question. Who would win, Terminator versus Predator HUD? Based upon their HUD, who would win a game of chess? Terminator versus Predator.
Based on their HUDs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Their data gathering abilities.
Yeah. You know, I haven't seen anything like strategic in the Predator HUD. I'm trying to think if there is. Is there?
It's a good question. I don't know.
Yeah, because it's very much based on different ways of seeing. So he can see, like, you know, the thermal, and he can see the different wavelengths, and but nothing predictive. So I'd have to go with Terminator.
Ding, 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 ding. No, I don't know.
Is there a right answer?
There's no right answer.
Did I win?
You want a live supply of toothpaste. Okay, well, that's all we had. We'll leave it with that, I suppose.
Nice, nice. You guys are awesome.
Thanks very much for your time. We really appreciate it. Where can people learn more about your work?
Just go to jayse.tv, so jace.tv.
Okay. Awesome. We'll be sure to put that in the show notes as well.
Yeah, man, thanks so much. This has been really, really interesting, and I've learned a lot, and I know that our listeners will, too, about this. You know, it's sort of obscure, but very intriguing very skill, right?
Yeah, well, you guys are awesome. I'm completely self-taught with all that I've done, and it's always been through, you know, like digital tutors and podcasts and things like what you guys are doing. So
nice.
Totally awesome. Cool that you guys are putting that stuff out there.
Well, really appreciate it. I'm definitely going to have a whole new appreciation for all of the interfaces.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. Seeing movies now, for sure.
Pause it, you know? Pause.
Yeah. I don't know. Exactly. Someone pixel fucked that.
It's a new phrase.
But anyway, we'll let you go, Jace. Thanks again, buddy.
All right, guys. Have a great afternoon.
Thanks, you too.
All right. Bye-bye.
Well, that was Jace Hansen, or also known as Local Badass. That was really cool. Really cool discussion. What'd you think about that whole idea of the fictional or fake user interface?
It makes perfect sense. I mean, especially as movies are getting more and more technology-based, as really technology all around us is that way, makes a lot of sense that everybody's putting so much time and effort into every other aspect. And yet, like, as you were saying, you know, in some movies, it's kind of decoration and that aspect. But in some movies, it's a very vital part. And so it makes sense that you have people, professionals like Jace, that are just focused on making sure that it pushes the story along and really helps you not only push the story, but develop the characters. I thought that was great. Like, Nick Fury has a different interface than... I don't remember the lady's name.
I can't remember. Hill or something?
Yeah. Maria Hill. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. And that really sort of surprised me that they get on that granular level, right?
Yeah. So but it makes perfect sense at the same time.
Exactly. So you have Nick Fury's user interface. Yeah. He's hard-edged, he said, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm tired of these mother effing snakes. Corners in this mother effing FUI.
That's a different movie.
No, but that's really awesome that someone put that much thought into it and that there are people out there doing it. And, of course, we don't, like I said, we don't pay attention to this, but it does register with us subconsciously or whatever.
Well, I think kind of as Jace alluded to, if it was done wrong, yeah, you would notice
you
it.
You would notice it.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think the fact that people, normal people like you and I, don't notice it,
we're
really
not normal.
Somewhat normal. not local yeah. badasses like yeah, Jace, right, you right. know. I think just the fact that don't notice it just goes to show how well it's done, how well yeah. it blends in. Just like, you know, any other VFX shot, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to notice it when it sticks
bad.
Out.
Yeah. yeah. That's yeah. how you identify the bad things. That's a bad thing right there. Yeah. You know, one thing I was going to ask him or suggest was this idea of, like, our technology mm-hmm. obviously influences the design of these kind of things.
Yeah,
right?
Sure,
and so we try and create some, well, what's it going to look like in the future, right?
Yeah.
Or when we have this kind of tech, what is it going to look like? I was going to ask him, did he think that designs today of futuristic UIs actually impact the design of actual UIs?
That's a good question.
Like, is it a back and forth?
Want to call him back?
Hey, can you call him back real quick on asking that? But
yeah, I mean, I guess I don't know the answer to that, so I can't answer it. But it would make sense to me, because if you think of a lot of just the regular technology, mm-hmm. I don't remember where I saw it. I saw some article somewhere that was talking about all the technology that came out of Star Trek.
Yeah.
And it was engineers and scientists that were fans of Star Trek.
Sure.
And they're like, oh, it'd be so cool to be able to do this.
We need a tricorder. Let's make a phone like that.
Yeah, right? Yeah, you know, exactly. Yeah. And so it would make sense that a lot of interfaces, mm-hmm. The artists out there that are creating those are also fans of Iron Man and sure. are also fans of these movies. And they, I mean, you draw inspiration from everywhere. It would make sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's probably, at the end of the day, it's a back and forth thing.
Sure. No, yeah.
Yeah.
It makes
it's
sense.
Like everything yeah. else. I really liked his Terminator versus Predator answer.
That yeah. pretty cool. That made, yeah, I would probably should have gone back and actually looked at what Predator's interface looks like. I don't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, it had nothing about chess on there. I forgot to put that in.
I forgot to put the chess.
Originally, the question was going to be asked.
So does Terminators, is that what you're implying?
We were originally going to ask who could put together an IKEA coffee table faster. But we wanted chess match.
The chess match is easier.
Yeah. So, thanks for listening to the Pixel Hub podcast, the official podcast of Digital Tutors. If you have any comments or questions, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter.
If you like the show, leave us a review on iTunes so other people can find it better. And you can find all of the links in the show notes. Thanks for listening.